start off by asking a question?
Okay.
What is it that Great Panthers and any other advocacy group can do, in your opinion, as the best input into this terrible situation? And also, does the Empower DC, or you personally, or some other leader in the district who's on this issue of housing and the trust fund that you described, have access to the mayor? Can you make an appointment personally to sit down and talk with the mayor or any members of the council about the need to continue this program?
Okay, let me say, I did put in your package call to action, and I put council people's number because we need to give them a call, but I also have some postcards here that I want to share with people, and I want people to, if you live in D.C., to fill it out and mail to the city council. You have 5 city council members, so I'd like for you to mail that. You have your ward council, and then you have your at-large council. So we have a lot. You have 5 council people, and I want you to make sure you get that and send it in. And of course, I've included some talking points. What it is we need, and what it is we want them to do. Now, we Empower DC don't have direct access to the mayor. There are some organizations around the city. I don't know if it's. I would suspect it's individuals more than organizations that have some relationship with Mr. Vincent Gray. And I know that some folks have been raising the issue about these cuts to housing with him. There are a number of organizations that have, in Power DC, and there are about 2 additional organizations that have put a that's putting energy into trying to make an impact and get these folks to be conscious. In fact, we had some demonstrations right before he introduced the budget, or right after, before and right after he introduced the budget, some demonstration at the council. At the district building, trying to get an opportunity to talk with him. Of course, I was kind of insulted by his budget person who came out. You know, we had this was at Friday, whatever, the 31st or something. We had this demonstration down there, and he was very, as far as I'm concerned, very nonchalant. You got, you know, 50 people or so, and all the media and everybody there, and he's not paying, in my opinion, paying people the appropriate attention that he need to. So for me, that is an indication of what the mayor thinks about the lowest income people, low and moderate income people in the city. So it's a battle, and it's an effort, and personally, I'm happy to see that a number of organizations have put some, it seems like, some additional resources into working around this budget. And we've created a group of allies and supporters and impacted people called the DC Save Our Home Coalition that we invite people to become a part of. It's a coalition of groups that we are raising the issue, and our intent is to get people who are most impacted by these drastic cuts to raise their voices. And I'm not even talking about, I haven't even talked about the cuts that we got in the federal budget that's impacting right now our local housing. Essentially, the people in the same income brackets. But yes, that makes sense. Yeah, you had
a couple of questions. Is there assistance in terms of foreclosures?
Uh-huh.
People in DC who have purchased homes are suffering from foreclosures too. Is there assistance for those people? And if so, what's happening to that?
Well, I don't know a whole lot about the foreclosure. Let me tell you what happened with the H.R. 1, FY 11 federal budget, right, that they passed yesterday, Friday, that they passed. Well, they defunded. The federal government defunded housing counseling services. They took out all the money, and there's nothing in FY 12 that will replace it. So that's part of the efforts that we are making with the federal, whatever we can do in terms of impacting the Democrats in the Senate to make sure that money is put back into housing counseling services. Now, D.C. receives monies for housing counseling, that is to help people do what they need to do to hold on to their homes that they've purchased through a number of federal funding, and all that funding have been cut. The housing counseling services funding that HUD made directly available to help people, and through the community development block grant money. That's been cut by both, it was cut in this 38.5, and Mr. Obama, in his, in the budget that he presented, he sliced up community development block grant money. So I kind of see homeowners being in the same, being part of these folks who need this emergency assistance, on top of there not being any money to help, like the HPAP. The HPAP has been cut for the last two fiscal years. HPAP, you know, is that program that DC has to assist more moderate income people in purchasing, to help them with down payment and the other costs. I forget what you call it when you have to pay for closing costs, yes, to help people with down payment, closing costs. So that has been cut for the last two fiscal years, and I don't know what is happening with it in FY 12.
Mm-hmm. So I kind of want to ask a bigger political question. Well, actually, one is very specific. So I know that on Wednesday, Save Our Safety Net, right, is supposed to be having some kind of demonstration at the Wilson Building. Is that something that we should all try to show up for? Okay, yes, right. It wasn't set up. But of course, I know that Linda has a flyer. Because for those of us that have followed this stuff for a long time, it's getting worse, not better.
Yeah, sure.
The politicians, whether they're Democrats, Republicans, or Republicrats, or whatever they are really abandoning us, right? And so I guess the bigger political question I wanted to put out is, have we thought about what we ought to be doing politically, right? Who we ought to be organizing and for what end? Yeah. Because, those of us that saw, from Barry to, what's his name, Bowtie to, to Venti to Gray, it's been downhill. Mm-hmm. And I mean, they're real, and the same with Obama. And so there are real, actual economic forces at play, right? There are broader economic and political forces. So, for some of us thinking about how do we get the vision that Linda's laid out on the back page here, it's like, what is the political force, and who should we be talking to, and how should we be thinking about us politically organizing, say over the next 5 years?
Yeah, sure.
No, we know Save Our Safety Net and the Fair Budget Coalition. The Fair Budget Coalition, I think they're taking the leadership on the demonstration, and I don't have a flyer on the demonstration. I have flyers on some of the budget briefing that's coming up, and preparing people to testify. What I see happening is there are people, there are organizations, it's not enough in my opinion. We don't have enough organizations that are pushing to be a power so that we can have some direct impact on what's going on, because it's all about the mayor's budget is a political priority. That in that budget, I mean, the mayor did push for some increase in revenue, you know, a little tiny increase in revenue people paying, making over $200,000. The mayor is asking for a point something increase. There have been some community groups that have been asking for a little higher increase for the people at the top of the scale in the District of Columbia, starting with the 100,000 all the way up. And so last in November, I think it was, when there was a big push when they were trying to close out the FY11 budget, Save Our Safety Net, and had come up with three or four tier increases. And and we had five council people to vote for it. Well, from what I understand from last week, those five may not be in the same place come June or May, June when the vote is taken. They may not be in the same place in terms of supporting the increase. But there are folks that are organizing to be a power. I don't know whatever happened to some of the groups like WIN, that used to be Washington Interfaith Network, that used to be around and used to work to, and had a little power and influence. They're still out there, but not as forceful. It what appeared to me as they used to be. So there are folks that are building toward it. We need to, and that's part of what we're doing, trying to get more people involved, if that makes sense. Are there other questions?
One is on the tax subsidy housing, where they have the developer has to set aside. Who controls those?
You're talking about the low-income housing tax credit?
Yes.
The low-income housing, that's the Housing Finance Agency and DHCD.
Separate from the voucher program?
Yes.
How many units in the district are there available of that type of housing?
I don't know, but it's growing. And let me tell you my concern about the low-income housing tax credit program. You know it's an investment. So
it doesn't last indefinitely.
Right, 15 years. It's for 15 years. So the low-income housing tax credit is a program where in exchange for making financing available to help develop housing, these investors will get an amount of tax credit, federal tax credits. Well, the problem with the low-income housing tax credit is the low-income housing tax credit support more moderate income people, and we have than the lowest income people, because you need when these developers receive the tax credits, rents and their rentals, the rents are higher, much higher than what the low income people can afford. So if there's no additional subsidy in the money pot to develop these properties, then the lowest income people cannot afford to live there. And right now, that's the primary program that DC has, and a lot of other jurisdictions have these low-income housing tax credits. And once the developer get it and develop the housing, they have to keep it open to moderate income people for 15 years. And then in DC, after the 15 years, they have to give the residents the opportunity to purchase. They have to give them the first right to purchase the property. So we, for the most part, the properties that are over Metro, you know, those rentals that are somewhere near a Metro stop or develop on top of Metro, for the most part, they are low-income housing tax credit properties. We definitely have a lot in Columbia Heights. And what's that wharf for?
Petworth
and Columbia Heights.
Agency control zones.
The Housing Finance, D.C. Housing Finance Agency on Florida Avenue. And also the D.C. Housing and Community Development has some involvement with tax credits as well. They are located on 1800 Good Hope Road.
The rental, finding tenants for those units that are set aside, who does that?
No, they don't go out. They are not obligated to go out and find the tenants. The tenants have to find them. What has happened?
Do you ever send any of your clients over there to one of these places?
Yes. We let folks know that they are there. I mean, there are two. That's one of the programs. Usually what happens is when, you know, I was telling you about the trust fund assisting folks who get the first right to purchase. Well, since the trust fund hasn't been available, then a lot of folks have had to partner with developers who have the low-income housing tax credits. And what usually happened in that situation is the original tenants get a commitment that they can stay there for X number, for the 15 years, for a modest increase in rent. But any new people come in have to be more moderate income. I mean, there's an income, you know, ceiling, but it's for the higher income, and that's good, because moderate income people in D.C. need a place to stay, but the people who are hurting the most are those. So that's about the only program that we saw Congress, the Republicans in the HR1 pushing was increasing the low-income housing tax credit. Now, it is a new tax credit that I'm not clear on yet, new market tax credit. I'm not sure how they work yet. That's something that just came out.
The question is, where do people go when they're displaced?
And that's part of what we're talking about. They will go to, they have centers, homeless centers like the Virginia Williams Center, right, Mr. named after the ex-mayor's mother.
Out of the district and go to Prince George's?
I suspect that's why, you know, we just read the article in last week's paper about the increase in homelessness. I suspect that's why homelessness is rising in some of the Virginia areas. I mean, I know people are having housing problems there, but yes, people are forced to leave the district.
Yeah, there is some of that. People who are really low income. I worked at St. Aloysius Church with the Father McKenna Center for several years. And you'll notice that in the suburbs, Prince George's County is nicknamed Ward 9, but also Lower Montgomery County, you'll see that the population is people who used to live in D.C. and moved over there because, not because their income is better, but because the public support underwrite their housing is more available, and because schools are safer and neighborhoods are safer and things like that. But some poor people have moved to the sort of inner ring of those counties for that reason. So they're still adjacent to D.C., which is their old home, but they're on the other side. They're in another jurisdiction that helps them a little bit more.
But the kind of phenomenon
you're talking about is not going to just hit D.C.
Well, that's the point. I'm just wondering if you have had any contacts with people in these areas to help people who are displaced in the district find places outside.
Well, let me say, the last few months, February and March, we were engaged in a major, major, major battle with Congress because they were looking to cut millions of units of housing, federally subsidized housing. So we were connected to folks all over the country, which included Maryland as well, because that Mr. Boehner, the House bill, before they agreed on the $38 billion, they were looking for 60. First they were looking for, in January they were looking for $100 billion, and then came February, they were looking at $60 billion. And so we joined with our residents from all over the country to say, listen, this is what we need to do, and let's talk with our senators and the Democratic senators and see if we can prevent that kind of major cut. A little bit, you know, it worked a little bit.
Yeah.
Not much. That 38.8, built $38.5 billion cut is still very harmful to the lowest income people.
It's all disproportionate.
Yeah, right, right. That's right. Disproportionately harmful to the lower. That's right. That's right. But we did get a chance to sit down with, like, we had a demonstration on Capitol Hill on February 14th. We call it Have a Heart Day. And so tenants from all over the country had a demonstration on the 14th. So we in D.C. and in the surrounding areas, we had a demonstration at the Russell Building, and we went in to talk with some senators from Maryland. We talked with Mr. Ben Cardin, his folks. We went in to talk with Ms. You were there. Ms. Dallas was there. We went in to talk to Barbara Murkowski. We went to, the best response we got was Patty Murray from Washington State. In fact, the staff person dealing with housing had been working so hard to try to stop these really drastic cuts until we could almost see it, her being exhausted, looked like she was about to lose her mind. So what we did was, when we went to talk with these senators, we took stories. We had some stories of some people in D.C. who were going to be heard, and we put it in a little Valentine's card. And so we had somebody to do a hand-knit hearts, and we put that in a little package, and we had information from some of the people, like in Washington State and in Boston, Massachusetts, who were having demonstration at the same time. And we put all that in this package, and we took it to them. But Ms. Patty Murray person had been working so hard, we had to send her an additional thank you card and a little, because she was really helpful. We did have an appointment with Warner. Was it Mr. Warner? Yeah, Mr. Warner from Virginia. And we had folks sit down and talk. And we had an appointment with Mr. Cardin, and folks sat down and talked. In fact, with Mr. Cardin, people had an opportunity to talk to his staff for about an hour. So we touched about 8 senators, and in fact, while we were in Mr. Scott Brown's office, you know, he was the only Tea Party that we talked with. while we were in, were you in Scott Brown?
Yes, I was.
Okay, so while we were in Scott Brown's office talking with him, his folks were making a call to the people in Boston who were demonstrating at his Boston office at the same time. And so they were saying, what's going on? You know, we got Miss Alice and these folks here giving us a hard time. You're giving us a hard time up there. So it was good. You know, they knew. I mean, you know, that's what we had to do.
Good job.
Yeah, it was good.
I have a question. Is there a way people in Maryland can get notices of votes on federal bills so that we can call our senators and our representatives?
Oh, yeah.
Mail notices?
Yeah, sure. I mean, in fact, maybe, because that's what I do when I get the information about housing. I send it out to folks, And so, and I'll put you on my line if you're not on there already. Yeah, and I ask people, we ask people to call and do that. In fact, what we're doing in D.C., because when we went to the senator and said, oh, we don't have senators, but the decision you're getting ready to make is going to hurt us just as bad as the people in your jurisdiction. So please don't do it. But, you know, what we were doing is I was asking people to call their relatives. And I was asking people, because I was calling, I wait till 11 o'clock at night and call these senators and say, listen, you know, don't do this. Don't do this thing. So they don't know. I could be a tourist. I could be, you know, somebody. They don't know that I live here in D.C. They just got a phone call from me saying, you know, you're going to don't vote this way. And so that's what we're asking people to do. And we were definitely asking people to call their relatives everywhere and have their relatives to call. So that's what we do in terms of take action.
I mean, you're pulling out all the plugs on the machine that you that I could see you doing.
Yeah.
I think we're up against a huge, huge wall.
Yeah.
Yes. And you're one of, homeless is just one of 15, 30, 50 issues that have groups behind them who are being hurt in a similar way. There's one of the things that Code Pink's working on nationwide is bring our war dollars home.
That's right. That's right.
And we also work on the whole corporate tax situation and the offshoring of jobs and so forth. All of those issues when you're talking about to senators or whatever, to include those, that if we weren't spending money on Iraq and Afghanistan and Libya and 150 bases around the world, and if we weren't offshoring and giving tax
That's
breaks
right.
to corporations, there would be money then for to train people and to educate people and to provide human services. I think that's a constant message that needs to be plowed in, because it's so often, so often I think we get, I don't know if it's pigeonholed, but it's waylaid into talking about the genuine issues, the genuine problems that we have, without showing that we understand that this is the end of the, or one towards the end of the pile up of money problems. And if we don't deal with where it originates, then we're leaving off participating in the solution.
Yeah.
If we want Gray to fix it, you know, Gray's not going to be able to fix it if he doesn't have the money to fix it. He's just moving pieces around. Mm-hmm. And I believe that that the whole core is a systemic problem, and it, you know, as you were saying, it's a political problem. But the only thing I can offer is there are issues. I actually brought some literature from Bring Our War Dollars Home.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's working in areas such as Maine, where the whole issue started. Maine is, of course, a smaller state, but they have a Republican governor, I guess, and a legislature is. And they are organizing a law around this issue, and when they have a meeting in the State House, in comes the speaker from the homeless, you know, the Linda Leakes person is at the podium, and the environmental people are speaking, and the child welfare people are speaking, but it's all on this issue. Like, we would have money for our programs that we fought long and hard for if the priorities of this government changed. Right. And I think, I'll pass around some of the literature, but it's all easy enough to download it. Another organization that this program links into is the National Priorities Project, which is the organization that says, so for Maine or for D.C., this is the amount of money that we would have if we brought our war dollars home. this is how much money it's actually costing us individually in D.C. Because of this. And you know, if we're speaking to senators and congresspeople and to the people assembled, I think this would help. If we join together speaking in one voice about this.
Let me say, Cold Peak has been great, and for me, because Cold Peak has been at almost every demonstration we've had, and Catholic Day workers have been there. And for me, the good thing is we can be there talking about the people who are going to tomorrow, if we don't get this thing, are going to be dying on the street. But then we have the other organization connecting the dots, you know, which is what I think is great, being a part of it and saying, listen, yes. I think at the Washington Peace Center event, when I was talking about our housing situation, where we had a couple of people who were here from out of town, and we worked on getting them to communicate with their congressperson, and they added the two things. Then we were talking about the federal budget, but they were able to say, you know, make the connection between the money that was being used for the war and what we were talking about. And I think it's great that we can, the various organizations that are with a particular focus, that we can connect the dots